I stepped out to the hallway again, listened hard, heard nothing. I could have searched the house, but I didn't need to. I was pretty sure there was nobody in it, and I knew there was nothing I needed to find. So I took a last look at the Kramer widow. I could see the soles of her feet. She hadn't been a widow for long. Maybe an hour, maybe three. I figured the blood on the floor was about 12 hours old. But it was impossible to be precise. That would have to wait until the doctors arrived. I retreated through the kitchen and went back outside and walked around to find Summer. Sent her inside to take a look. It was quicker than a verbal explanation. She came out again 4 minutes later, looking calm and composed. Score one for Summer, I thought.
You like coincidences?
She said. I said nothing.
We have to go to D.C., she said, to Walter Reed. We have to make him double-check Kramer's autopsy.
I said nothing.
This makes his death automatically suspicious. I mean, what are the chances? It's 1 in 40 or 50,000 that an individual soldier would die on any given day, but to have his wife die on the same day? For her to be a homicide victim on the same day?
Wasn't the same day, I said. Wasn't even the same year. She nodded.
Okay, New Year's Eve, New Year's Day. But that just makes my point. It's inconceivable that Walter Reed had a pathologist scheduled to work last night, so they had to drag one in specially. And from where? From a party, probably.
I smiled briefly. So you want us to go up there and say, hey, are you sure your doc could see straight last night? Sure he wasn't too juiced up to spot the difference between a heart attack and a homicide?
We have to check, she said. I don't like coincidences.
What do you think happened in there?
Intruder, she said. Miss Kramer was woken up by the noise of the door, got out of bed, grabbed a shotgun she kept near at hand, came downstairs, headed for the kitchen. She was a brave lady.
I nodded. General's wives, tough as they come.
But she was slow, Summer said. The intruder was already all the way into the study and was able to get it from the side, with a crowbar he'd used on the door. As she walked past, he was taller than she was, maybe by foot, probably right-handed.
I said nothing.
So we going to Walter Reed?
I think we have to, I said. We'll go as soon as we've finished here. We called the Green Valley cops from a wall phone we found in the kitchen. Then we called Garber and gave him the news. He said he would meet us at the hospital. Then we waited. Summer watched the front of the house, and I watched the back. Nothing happened. The cops came within 7 minutes. They made a tight little convoy, two marked cruisers, a detective's car, an ambulance. They had lights and sirens going. We heard them a mile away. They howled into the driveway and then shut down. Summer and I stepped back in the sudden silence, and they all swarmed past us. We had no role. A general's wife is a civilian, and the house was inside a civilian jurisdiction. Normally, I wouldn't let such fine distinctions get in my way, but the place had already told me what I needed to know. So I was prepared to stand back and earn some brownie points by doing it by the book. Brownie points might come in useful later. A patrolman watched us for 20 long minutes while the other cops poked around inside. Then a detective in a suit came out to take our statements. We told him about Kramer's heart attack, the widow trip, the banging door. His name was Clark, and he had no problem with anything we had to say. His problem was the same as Summer's. Both Kramers had died miles apart on the same night, which was a coincidence, and he didn't like coincidences any better than Summer did. I started to feel sorry for Rick Stockton, the deputy chief down in North Carolina. His decision to let me haul Kramer's body away was going to look bad in this new light. It put half the puzzle in the military's hands. It was going to set up a conflict. We gave Clark a phone number where he could reach us at Byrd, and then we got back in the car. I figured D.C. was another 70 miles, another hour and 10, maybe less the way Summer drove. She took off and found the highway again and put her foot down until the Chevy was vibrating fit to bust.
I saw the briefcase in the photograph, she said. Did you?
Yes, I said.
Does it upset you to see dead people?
No, I said.
Why not?
I don't know. You?
It upsets me a little.
I said nothing.
You think it was a coincidence?
She said. No, I said. I don't believe in coincidences.
So you think the postmortem missed something?
No, I said again. I think the postmortem was probably accurate.
So why are we driving all the way to D.C.?
Because I need to apologize to the pathologist. I dropped him in it by sending him Kramer's body. Now he's going to have wall-to-wall civilians bugging him for a month. That will piss him off big time. But the pathologist was a her, not a him, and she had such a sunny disposition that I doubted anything could piss her off for long. We met her in the Walter Reed Army Medical Center's reception area, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, New Year's Day. It looked like any other hospital lobby. There were holiday decorations hanging from the ceilings. They already looked a little tired. Garber had arrived before us. He was sitting on a plastic chair. He was a small man and didn't seem uncomfortable, but he was quiet. He didn't introduce himself to Summer. She stood next to him. I leaned on the wall. The doctor faced us with a sheaf of notes in her hand, like she was lecturing a small group of keen students. Her name badge read Sam McGowan, and she was young and dark and brisk and open.
General Kramer died of natural causes, she said. Heart attack, last night, after 11, before midnight. There's no possibility of doubt. I'm happy to be audited if you want, but it would be a complete waste of time. His toxicology was absolutely clear. The evidence of ventricular fibrillation is indisputable, and his arterial plaque was monumental. So forensically, your only tentative question might be whether by coincidence someone electrically stimulated fibrillation in a man almost certain to suffer it anyway within minutes or hours, or days or weeks. How'd it be done?
Summer asked. McGowan shrugged.
The skin would have to be wet over a large area. The guy would have to be in a bathtub, basically. Then if you applied wall current to the water, you'd probably get fibrillation without burn marks. But the guy wasn't in a bathtub, and there's no evidence he ever had been. What if his skin wasn't wet? Then I'd have seen burn injuries, and I didn't. And I went over every inch of him with a magnifying glass. No burns, no hypodermic marks, no nothing. What about shock, a surprise, a fear?
The doctor shrugged again.
Possible, but we know what he was doing, don't we? That kind of sudden sexual excitement is a classic trigger.
Nobody spoke.
Natural causes, folks,
McGowan said.
Just a big old heart attack. Every pathologist in the world could take a look at him, and there would be 100% agreement. I absolutely guarantee it.
Okay, Garber said. Thanks, Doc. I apologize, I said. You're going to have to repeat all that to about 24 civilian cops every day for a couple of weeks. She smiled.
I'll print up an official statement.
Then she looked at each of us in turn in case we had any more questions. We didn't, so she smiled once more and swept away through a door. It sucked shut behind her, and the ceiling decorations rustled and stilled, and the reception area went quiet. We didn't speak for a moment. Okay, Garber said. That's it. No controversy with Kramer himself, and his wife is a civilian crime. It's out of our hands. Did you know Kramer? I asked him. Garber shook his head. Only by reputation. Which was? Arrogant. He was armored branch. The Abrams tank is the best toy in the army. Those guys rule the world, and they know it. Know anything about the wife? He made a face. She spent way too much time at home in Virginia, is what I hear. She was rich from an old Virginia family. I mean, she did her duty. She spent time on post in Germany. Only when you add it up, it really wasn't a hell of a lot of time. Like now, 12 Corps told me she was home for the holidays, which sounds okay, but actually she came home for Thanksgiving and wasn't expected back until the spring, so the Kramers weren't real close by all accounts. No kids, no shared interests. Which might explain the hooker, I said, if they live separate lives. I guess, Garber said. I get the feeling it was a marriage, you know, but it was more window dressing than anything real.
What was her name?
Summer asked. Garber turned to look at her. Mrs. Kramer, he said. That's all a name we need to know. Summer looked away. Who was Kramer traveling to Irwin with, I asked. Two of his guys, Garber said. A one-star general and a colonel, Vassal and Coomer. They were a real triumvirate. Kramer, Vassal, and Coomer, the corporate face of armor. He stood up and stretched. Start at midnight, I said to him. Tell me everything you did. Why? Because I don't like coincidences, and neither do you. I didn't do anything. Everybody did something, I said, except Kramer. He looked straight at me. I watched the ball drop, he said. Then I had another drink. I kissed my daughter. I kissed a whole bunch of people, as I recall. Then I sang Auld Lang Syne. And then? My office got me on the phone, told me they'd found out by circuitous means that we had a dead two-star down in North Carolina. Told me the Fort Byrd MP duty officer had palmed it off, so I called there and got you. And then? You set out to do your thing. I called the town cops and got Kramer's name. Looked him up and found he was a 12 Corps guy, so I called Germany and reported the death, but I kept the details to myself. I told you this already. And then? Then nothing. I waited for your report. Okay, I said. Okay, what? Okay, sir. Bullshit, he said. What are you thinking? The briefcase, I said. I still want to find it. So keep looking for it, he said, until I find Vassal and Coomer. They can tell us whether there was anything in it worth worrying about. You can't find them? He shook his head. No, he said. They checked out of their hotel, but they didn't fly to California. Nobody seems to know where the hell they are. Garber left to drive himself back to town, and Summer and I climbed into the car and headed south again. It was cold, and it was getting dark. I offered to take the wheel, but Summer wouldn't let me. Driving seemed to be her main hobby.
Colonel Garber seemed tense, she said.
She sounded disappointed, like an actress who'd failed an audition. He was feeling guilty, I said.
Why?
Because he killed Mrs. Kramer. She just stared at me. She was doing about 90, looking at me, sideways. In a manner of speaking, I said.
How?
This was no coincidence.
That's not what the doctor told us.
Kramer died of natural causes. That's what the doctor told us. But something about that event led directly to Mrs. Kramer becoming a homicide victim. And Garber set all that in motion by notifying 12 Corps. He put the word out, and within about 2 hours, the widow was dead too.
So what's going on?
I have absolutely no idea, I said.
And what about Vassal and Coomer?
She said.
They were a threesome. Kramer's dead, his wife is dead, and the other two are missing?
You heard the man. It's out of our hands.
You're not going to do anything?
I'm going to look for a hooker. We set off on the most direct route we could find, straight back to the motel and the lounge bar. There was no real choice. First the Beltway, and then I-95. Traffic was light. It was still New Year's Day. The world outside our windows looked dark and quiet, cold and sleepy. Lights were coming on everywhere. Summer drove as fast as she dared, which was plenty fast. What might have taken Kramer 6 hours was going to take us less than 5. We stopped for gas early, and we bought stale sandwiches that had been made in the previous calendar year. We forced them down as we hustled south. Then I spent 20 minutes watching Summer. She had small, neat hands. She had them resting lightly on the wheel. She didn't blink much. Her lips were slightly parted, and every minute or so she would run her tongue across her teeth. Talk to me, I said.
About what?
About anything, I said. Tell me the story of your life.
Why?
Because I'm tired, I said, to keep me awake.
Not very interesting.
Try me, I said. So she shrugged and started at the beginning. which was outside of Birmingham, Alabama, in the middle of the 60s. She had nothing bad to say about it, but she gave me the impression that she knew even then there were better ways to grow up than poor and black in Alabama at that time. She had brothers and sisters. She'd always been small, but she was nimble, and she parlayed a talent for gymnastics and dancing and jumping rope into a way of getting noticed at school. She was good at the bookwork, too, and had assembled a patchwork of minor scholarships and moved out of state to a college in Georgia. She had joined the ROTC, and in her junior year, the scholarships ran out and the military picked up the tab in exchange for 5 years' future service. She was now halfway through it. She had aced MP school. She sounded comfortable. By that point, the military had been integrated for 40 years, and she said she found it to be the most colorblind place in America. But she was also a little frustrated about her own individual progress. I got the impression her application to the 110th was make or break for her. If she got it, she was in for life, like me. If she didn't, she was out after 5.